Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom, and by my side, the ever-curious, unquestionably unadventurous, and mildly bemusing, Silent Dave. So Dave bounds in for recording this afternoon with something that he's dragged up from the dirty bowels of the internet. Apparently, if you're shopping at your local supermarché and you stumble upon a couple with an upturned pineapple in their trolley, it means they're swingers. It's the equivalent of a fruit invitation for naked group shenanigans. Dave innocently asked me, why a pineapple? And I said, because it's exotic, I suppose. To which he replied, it's a cross between a cactus and a tough grapefruit. I have no reply for you, sir. You are as baffling as the uneducated moth craving some light bulb action. On the menu tonight, we have the top three most expensive trophies in football. We dip into the Arsenal archives, cover Arsenal's WSL clash with Brighton and Hove Albion in Gonna Get Into It with Lauren. Connor's back with his match report on the Brentford game, and myself, Jay, Lauren and Nick from the Arsenal Brothers podcast will also be discussing the talking points in the gun room, which proves slightly difficult when you can't remember who you've played. It's not a gun room this week, it's more of a fun room. Check out the banter. When we get it wrong, we get it wrong. Plus, Connor delivers another excellent player profile on Hector Bellerin. What else have we got? Well, we tell you about their savage price hike for those classic collector's pieces, Panini stickers. We make the first ever menu out of footballers' names. Nice work. Nice research, Dave, eh? Have another donut. What's that for?
It's an Arsenal thing. It's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
So Tuchel has gone, Potter the boy wizard has gone to Todd Waltz in West London, and Sean Dyche is hoping for another Leicester defeat. First up, it's the Arsenal archives. More than 40 years after Alan Sunderland scored one of the most famous goals in FA Cup final history against Manchester United, let's just slip it in there, I was there. The celebrations have started again. His winner's medal from the epic game in 1979 has sold for £21,000. That's double what it was expected to fetch. The former England player said in 2019 he was considering selling the medal to make life a little easier. His two FA Cup runners-up medals, along with other items also sold by Graham Budd Auctions in London, fetched £9,000 in total. The Arsenal striker scored the last-minute winner as his team beat Manchester United 3-2 at Wembley, known as the Brady Final, obviously. What a cracker that was. I was there the night before, cut a long story short. I didn't have a ticket for Wembley, but my mate Gary and his brother did, Tony, give him a mention. We got to Wembley Stadium. I didn't even think about it. I took the two tickets, sold it off, put the money in my pocket, turned round to Gary and Tony, and they said, oops, you're up the Man United end. So, fast forward, the goal goes in. I shout and scream and holler, arms in the air, dancing around, suddenly notice a sea of angry-faced Northerners. But I survived. I'm here to do the pod. What a great day. Brilliant final. Probably one of the best. A 2013 meeting between Arsenal and West Ham United was thought to have once held the record for stoppage time at the end of the game, with the clock ticking beyond 102 minutes following an injury to Hammers defender Dan Potts. 2011, Arsenal signed Everton's Mikel Arteta for £10 million after the Spanish midfielder submitted a transfer request to force the deal through. Arteta, 29, joined the Gunners on a four-year contract just before the transfer window closed. The deal had looked to be dead earlier after talks between the two clubs broke down, but Arteta handed in the transfer request an hour before the deadline. Arsenal also signed Chelsea's Yossi Benayoun, 31, on a season-long loan. That went well. Time for Connor, we've got to get into it.
The Gunners bounced back from our Old Trafford defeat in style on Sunday afternoon with a controlled and comprehensive 3-0 win over Thomas Frank's Brentford at the GTEC Community Stadium. The home side's manager was full of praise for Arteta's men before and after Sunday's midday kickoff, talking up our title chances as we leapfrogged Manchester City and Tottenham Hotspur with a brilliant win on Sunday. With our home game against Everton postponed, of course, last Sunday due to the deaths of Queen Elizabeth II, this was our first match since our Europa League away win in Zurich 2 weeks ago. Martin Odegaard picked up an untimely injury just before the game, and so he was replaced by Fabio Vieira, who made his first start for the Gunners since his summer arrival from Porto. Emile Smith-Rowe was also once again sidelined, which made space for 15-year-old Ethan Inwaneri, who was included in the Arsenal first team matchday squad for the very first time. And what a moment for the youngster. Remember the name, Ethan Inwaneri. He joined Arsenal at the age of 9, and he was born a year after we started playing at the Emirates Stadium. Incredible. Coming off the bench to replace the dazzling Fabio Vieira in the second minute of second half stoppage time, Inwaneri became the youngest player to ever appear in the Premier League. He broke the record previously held by Harvey Elliott for Liverpool and also broke the all-time English top-flight record held since August 1964 by former Sunderland goalkeeper Derek Forster. He also became Arsenal's youngest ever player in any competition, breaking the previous record of 16 years and 177 days, which was set by the one and only Cesc Fabregas. Well, let's get into the team news, and Thomas Partey returned from injury to slot into his regular defensive midfield role alongside Granit Xhaka. And as mentioned, Odegaard missed out, so did Smith-Rowe. Alexander Zinchenko was also unavailable, so Kieran Tierney started once again at left back. And in my opinion, Tierney is slowly but surely getting back to his best. Before his injury, we haven't quite seen the best of Tierney, but I think on Sunday, he was really, really showing signs of getting back to the Kieran Tierney we know. And well, a first Premier League start for 22-year-old Fabio Vieira was memorably marked with a superb long-range left-footed strike from just outside the Brentford box 4 minutes into the second half to ultimately kill off the game. The action then, and the atmosphere was understandably subdued before kick-off, with both sets of players and supporters observing a minute's silence in tribute to Queen Elizabeth II. That was followed by a rendition of the national anthem, and Arsenal did sport black armbands for Sunday's encounter. Well, let's get into the action, and Arsenal really should have taken the lead inside 2 minutes as Martinelli found Xhaka with a lovely through ball. Xhaka's cutback was clever as he found Martinelli with the return pass, but our Brazilian lost his footing at the crucial moment as he just about went to strike, and the ball rolled comfortably into the arms of Brentford's Spanish goalkeeper David Raya. We continued to dominate possession and finally deservedly took the lead in the 17th minute as Bukayo Saka's lovely whipped corner towards the near post was met beautifully by a towering William Saliba, whose glanced header went in off the far post and over the line despite Raya's efforts to keep it out. The ball had clearly crossed the line, and it was 1-0 to the Arsenal, 17 minutes gone, our early dominance rewarded. William Saliba's second Premier League goal of the season. And we continued to look for that second, and our lead was soon doubled as Granit Xhaka's deliciously world-class ball over the top for Jesus was stunningly headed into the top corner by our Brazilian striker in the 28th minute. Jesus' fourth goal of the season and his seventh goal involvement of the campaign. And listen to this, what a stat. Jesus is the first ever Arsenal player to be involved in 7 goal involvements in his first 7 Premier League appearances. He just seems unstoppable, and what a header. But Granit Xhaka take a bow, his third assist of the campaign. And well, Bukayo Saka grabbed his fourth assist of the current Premier League campaign. He drifted in unchallenged before laying it off to Fabio Vieira on the edge of the box. Granit Xhaka was screaming for it, but Vieira went for goal himself and he found the net with a spectacular left-footed drive, which cannoned in off the post. Saka's curling effort was then saved brilliantly in the 64th minute before Jesus was twice denied by Raya. And then, the headline-grabbing moment, Ethan Nwaneri came on for the final few minutes of stoppage time. He got a few touches, a few blocks, and well, at only 15 years of age, he's been touted as an exceptionally gifted playmaker. So I'm sure we'll see him perhaps in the League Cup, the Carabao Cup, and maybe perhaps the FA Cup as well. Well, a really bright future ahead for him. And well, next up for Arsenal is that league, that crunch league encounter, the first North London derby of the 2022-23 Premier League season. It's at the Emirates on Saturday the 1st of October after the international break. Tottenham, bring it on. We're a point clear of our rivals at the top of the Premier League table. It feels pretty damn good to be top of the league ahead of the international break, doesn't it? It finished at the GTEC Community Stadium on Sunday. Brentford 0, Arsenal 3.
Now, we've all felt the impact of inflation. I mean, the other day, I was round the back of Tesco's and there was this bloke in a dirty old Mac, opened his coat, selling cheap Bisto like a drug dealer. Honestly, the effects of inflation are incredible. Well, it's now tripped into the football sticker album world. Collecting and completing the official Panini FIFA World Cup Qatar 22 album will cost the average fan about £870. Panini, which first produced a World Cup sticker album for the 1970 tournament in Mexico, has priced five sticker packs for the Qatar 22 album at 90 pence each. That's a 12.5% increase on the 80 pence cost of a five sticker pack for the Russia 2018 album. For Euro 2016, a pack cost just 50 pence. There are a total of 670 Qatar 2022 stickers, which went on sale recently. However, because of duplicates, fans would on average need to buy 4,832 stickers to complete an album, according to calculations by Paul Harper, a mathematics professor at Cardiff University. At 18 pence a sticker, that works out to £870. The total average cost has increased from £770 in 2018. There were more stickers in the album as well. Harper said if fans were extremely lucky and never had a duplicate in the packets they bought, they would need to buy a minimum of 137 packets to complete the entire book. And that would cost £120.60. But what's the chances? We all know that answer. But he did witter on a bit. Professor Harper said most people will find they collect many duplicate stickers. He worked out the formula to predict the probability of duplicates. The first sticker you buy is absolutely guaranteed not to be a duplicate. Yes. I should be a professor as well. Right, let's go over to Lauren for the latest on Arsenal's WSL campaign against Brighton and Hove Albion in Gonna Get Into It.
An emphatic win. That's how Arsenal's opening WSL game has been described. A dominating performance saw the Gunners walk away as 4-0 victors over Brighton. Before the game got underway at Meadow Park, home of the Gunners, a minute of silence was observed for the Queen following her death. Tributes were also paid to Maria Petri, a club icon and lifelong supporter. She passed away this summer, aged 83. Petri's interest in Arsenal began in 1950, having heard the club often mentioned on the radio in her kitchen. Soon after, she began to sneak off to watch the games herself. She was an ever-present figure at Arsenal across all levels, but perhaps most iconically at the women's game. She defied her parents' dislike of her attending football matches, as it was not for girls, and she endured misogynistic jeering at the men's games, to which she would simply reply, "You'll never keep me quiet." Additionally, she was a shareholder and always fought for more investment into the women's games at meetings. Following the devastating announcement of her death, club legends and current players, both men and women, pay tribute to Maria Petri. Her cheerful smile graced the front cover of our first matchday programme of the season. Further tribute was paid before kickoff got underway. The seat that she so fondly occupied for many years was left empty on the night out of respect, but going forward, it will be donated to the Arsenal Foundation and filled weekly by deserving fans. So the game got underway, and from the get-go, Arsenal looked very in control and comfortable, causing trouble most notably down the left flank. McCabe and Ford had some very impressive link-up play, which resulted in the first corner of the season for Arsenal in the 5th minute. Not long after, in the 7th minute, Brighton defender Emma Kullberg was shown a red for her challenge on Blackstenius to deny a goal-scoring opportunity. Just a fraction outside the box, Arsenal were awarded a free kick, which resulted in a corner. Despite their complete domination, we've struggled to find the back of the net. Some great link-up play, most notably on that left-hand side from Ford, but we seem to be lacking someone with a finishing touch. In the 25th minute, Brighton broke on the counter, but debutante Elizabeth Tierland fired wide from a tight angle, which in the end didn't cause much trouble for Zinsberger in the Arsenal net. Shortly afterwards, Arsenal finally capitalised on their dominating performance, with captain Kim Little sliding Ford's cutback past Brighton keeper Megan Walsh, who had an exceptional game. So we had a few more chances before the halftime whistle went, but Brighton's stubborn defending kept the game within their reach going into the second half, to which they had a very good start, forcing a save out of Zinsberger, who dived to deny Katie Robinson the halftime substitution and equaliser. In the 50th minute, Arsenal's lead doubled thanks to Blackstenius' powerful shot, which she deserved, having hit the crossbar and post on previous occasions. From then on in, we were in full control. Having provided the assist for the Swedish forward, Beth Mead got her name on the score sheet too. Miedema's perfectly timed pass found Beth Mead, who scored with her first touch. Not bad from the Poshenbecks of the lesbian world, as they have branded themselves. After Arsenal's three went in, we saw the first changes, with Blackstenius and Ford, who both had exceptional games, making way for Steph Catley and summer signing Lena Herting. In the 77th minute, Miedema and Valti were subbed for Manu and Nobbs, who everyone is excited to see have her, quote, revenge season after missing out on a place in England's Euro-winning squad this summer due to injury. And in what seemed like a fairy tale ending, Mead got her second of the night in the 83rd minute. Perhaps that was the most fitting tribute to Maria Petri, who passed away at 83 years of age. Ruben Moy came on to make a cameo, replacing Leah Williamson, who had a great game at centre-back. And that's how the game finished, 4-0. So overall, it was a fantastic start for the Arsenal. Perhaps a slightly flattering scoreline for Brighton, but in all honesty, they did defend well with 10 players on the pitch. In her post-match interview, Mead did admit that she would have liked to have scored a few more on the night, and given the number of chances created, I'm sure the feeling was echoed by most players. So a quick look at the stats confirms Arsenal's total domination. 14 shots on target compared to Brighton's 1, 12 shots off compared to their 2. We had 74% of total possession and 13 corner kicks compared to their 1. Caitlin Ford picked up the only yellow card of the match in the 59th minute. Shockingly, it wasn't Katie McCabe. And of course, we know about Brighton's red card in the 7th minute. So there we have it. A great start to the season. Arsenal sit top, followed by United, who also won 4-0 against Reading. We now have 3 major games coming up in the next 2 weeks. Tuesday 20th, we take on Ajax in the first leg of our round 2 Champions League qualifier, with the second leg to be played on the following Wednesday away from home. By the time this is released, we should already know how the girls got on in their first leg. Not only that, Saturday sees the North London Derby take place in the Emirates Stadium. Very exciting occasion, a game which is set to break the record for the highest WSL attendance of all time. It will also be shown live on BBC, so there's no excuses not to watch it, especially if you're missing Arsenal during the international break. That's all from me. I hope you enjoyed, and I look forward to bringing you more news and updates next week. Thanks so much.
Right, let's do a section on the most valuable trophies in football. Any Spurs fans can now leave the room. This is a section with no interest for you and could either upset you or cause irreparable damage to your self-esteem. In third place, on top of all the money that he earns in wages and sponsorship deals, Lionel Messi has had the good fortune to have his hands on more than one Ballon d'Or. And it's worth 3.5 million euros. Can you imagine that in your cabinet? You'd have to have armed guards, wouldn't you, around it, and Alsatians and all that sort of thing. Second place, well, it's a bit of a surprise, really. The FA Cup, which is the biggest and oldest knockout competition in England. So how much is the FA Cup actually worth? Well, it's in excess of £1 million. But it's not just a trophy, it's the memories that it brings. David and Goliath, the small club against the massive club, the victories down there, the Sunderlands. You can go back, it's just a potpourri of memories, good ones as well. Saturday afternoon, it was the only game on TV, the only televised game. Mum would buy some snacks, some crisps, some cakes and all that sort of thing. And the whole family gathered round. We had grated cheese in our crisp bags with a little blue packet that you put your own salt in. And a rosette as massive as a child's head. And it was made out of really naff silk in your team's colours. And it had a little printed Arsenal label on it and a little silver emblem of the FA Cup, a replica. And that was it, you were done. But it's so many memories. I'm so proud we've won it so often. And it's always nice to see it in its second home, not Wembley, in its second home at the Emirates. The current one is a replica of the 2014 design, which is made from 6.3 kg of sterling silver. It took English luxury brand Thomas Light 250 hours to craft this majestic piece of silverware. Arsenal were, of course, the most successful side in the history of the FA Cup. They've won it 14 times. Should we go on about it? Ring a friend. 14 times. Put the phone down. Manchester United are close behind in second with 12 FA Cups in their cabinet. And Spurs, they've got a lot of dust. There's a lot of cleaning to do. Mr. Sheen, shh, dusters. And in first place, it's only fitting that the biggest occasion in football has the biggest and most expensive trophy. The FIFA World Cup is the most expensive trophy at 17 million euros. It has 18 carats of gold in there, and there are two bands made from malachite in the base of the trophy. It weighs 6.1 kilograms. The trophy is totally majestic, and its body contains two human figures holding up a globe.
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gun room. And we've got a new face. We've got Jay underneath. How are you, Jay?
All good, thanks.
Lauren, she couldn't get enough punishment, so she's come back.
Hi, lovely to be back.
And we've got Nick from the Arsenal Brothers podcast. How are you, Nick?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Tom.
No problem at all. They asked me, why have you got a party hat on? I said, all will be revealed. Well, it's David Seaman's 59th birthday. And it's also Rob Holding's birthday, but he's not 59, he's 27. Right then, strap in. We're going to be covering the Bournemouth game, the WSL clash against Brighton, as well as a whole host of other tidbits. Lauren's going to bring us up to date with Ajax versus Arsenal in the game tonight. How's it going there, Lauren? Let's just have a bit of Sky stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I put the headset on. I wanted to look the part, you know? Yeah, it's been, to be honest, the first half wasn't very good. We got off to a very slow start and Ajax capitalised on a counter-attack. We went into half-time 1-1. Second half, we're looking a lot better. Kim Little put us back in front with a penalty, so can't really complain, but we'd definitely like to capitalise on a few more chances tonight going into the away fixture next week.
Yeah, we need to get in front, don't we? Mm. Just to say that the viewing figures and subscriptions have been growing and the likes and following for the audio version, so thank you very much for that. There's no Paul tonight and he won't be with us for a couple of weeks. And also Mitch has left the podcast, but we'd like to thank Mitch for 18 pods of excellent stuff and contributions. On the 27th of this month, we have a really special guest on the YouTube special. It's Arsenal legend, midfielder, coach, and now author of Arsenal and After. It's Paul Davis, so we're really excited and looking forward to that. If you've got any questions, send them via email. It's an arsenalthing4@gmail.com. Right, first, let's go to Nick. Let's strap in and get busy. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Nick, about the podcast and how you became an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, I grew up in the States and obviously still live here, played footy my whole life, played in college, coached for a while, and have been a faithful Arsenal supporter for about half my life now. I remember my mom getting the soccer extension package on our cable TV. And so every weekend I would just watch all day. And here you have to pick a team. It's not geographically based. So you just have to pick a team. And I think I was intrigued by the maroon 02 kits and looked a little more into it and learned more about Arsene Wenger. And I was hooked and have been a faithful follower since then. So about half of my life, and have gone through the ups and the downs, and started the podcast with a couple other friends that I knew from college that are also coaches. And we have 30 episodes at the Arsenal Bros on Twitter with my friends Ben and Kevin. And yeah, we've just really enjoyed having a weekly outlet to chat more about you know, the team that we love and just kind of going through it together. It was funny because we started it after the international break, the last international break last year. So we were flying, and our first three episodes were all after losses. And so we can take part of the blame for the downhill end of last season. So forgive us for that. But so far, so good to start this season.
I'm quite superstitious. I've got a particular Arsenal shirt that I can't wear because every time I wear it, they lose. And then I did this bit where I was going to Highbury, and when I went, they lost. So I thought, oh, I'll stay away this week, you know, and they still lost. So I went back and they lost again. So, you know, it's not just me. It's, thanks for that, Nick. On to the Arsenal game against Bournemouth. No Odegaard, Fabio Vieira was in. Jay, were you happy with the starting 11? Let's just take you through it. As Aaron Ramsdale, Kieran Tierney, Gabriel, William Saliba, Ben White, Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka, Gabriel Martinelli, Fabio Vieira, Bukayo Saka, and Gabriel Jesus. Were you happy with that lineup, Jay?
Yeah, I assume you mean the Brentford game.
Yeah.
Not, have you been drinking?
Yeah. Well, I've got a lemonade.
All right. Yeah. There's a few.
Did I say Bournemouth?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Slip it.
Anyway, well, you can edit that out anyway. So yeah. So
leave it in. It's real. It's natural. It's organic.
Obviously, we were missing Zinchenko, and so obviously Kieran Tierney. I think we spoke last week, didn't we, about having such a great, well, you won't really call him a backup, just a different option to slot in. And then obviously Odegaard as well, missing with a muscular problem, you know, so we got to have a look at Fabio Vieira. I mean, it just shows that our depth, you know, our strength in depth has obviously improved this season or in the summer. And yeah, pleased with the team. Obviously there weren't going to be too many changes defensively, but I said, didn't I, Tom, to Paul a couple of pods ago that, you know, I expected to see a reaction from the United game. I expected us to sort of dominate Everton. Obviously that game got called off, and I was, you know, obviously like I'm sure the rest of us, super impressed with the way we started, and we just completely dominated from the, you know, the first whistle and shut Brentford down and quiet in the stadium, silenced the fans. And it was a performance that, you know, super encouraging. We absolutely dominated, and it was great that the lads that came in did so well, you know, especially Vieira. So yeah, I was delighted.
I was a little bit worried because all this stop start that we were having at the minute, and there's rumours that the North London derby might be called off for a train strike and stuff, and I was kind of a little bit worried that you've got that hangover from a loss and then you're starting up again. So, Nick, what did you make of the bench? I looked at that bench and I nearly fell over. I mean, it was, you know, it was littered with unknown names for a lot of people, including myself.
Yeah, it seems like the bench that we were all hoping for with the Europa League games. But we went a little stronger in that first game against Zurich, but was excited. It's a little concerning this point in the year to have so many guys missing. Nothing seems too major outside of Mohamed Elneny, but to see the names of Matty Smith, Lino Sosa, Juan Neri, and Roel Walters back, it's a lot of really young guys. I mean, you'd like to think we can handle Brentford and can throw them on as a victory cigar like we did. But yeah, to me, it's a little concerning just the amount of niggling injuries. And I know Mikel said, I think at the beginning of the season, where he recognized last year when he had to rush guys back and risk them. And we look at Tomiyasu with him coming back and getting the same injury. Yeah, I think I'm a little concerned, just those little injuries, but the games are coming so fast and so heavy that, you know, we don't have time. You just have to throw somebody in there. And I trust that if these guys are ready for the bench, they're ready to play. And I think I was encouraged to see Roel Walters over preseason. He looked tremendous. But we just got to get these guys blooded it kind of reminds me of the end of last year, how many young guys continue to make the bench and to get that match day experience. I think there's a lot of value in that. So hoping maybe they get some Europa minutes, and if they need to be called upon, they can at least hold their own. But yeah, I think it's positive, a sign of Hale End just continuing to pump out talent. But yeah, also just a little concerned with just the amount of little injuries there are.
Well, we're going to talk about injuries because it seems to be a popular topic on social media. Ethan Nwanyeri. Did I get that right?
Sounds good.
Practice. Yeah. Yeah, it sounded pretty fluent, didn't it?
Surely the 15-year-old, that's enough, yeah, isn't it? We all know who
that
is.
Yeah, we could do that as well, couldn't we?
Absolutely.
Youngest ever in Arsenal's history. I mean, and I think he'd beaten Cesc Fabregas, who was 16 years and 177 days old. There's two opinions about that bench, Lauren. Mm. One was he's an exceptional talent and he's worth putting into the side. And the other one is because the squad is still a bit bare, still a bit thin.
You're not really going to risk it with a 15-year-old if he isn't that good. I mean, okay, yeah, we were in complete control of the game throughout and he only came on for what, the final two minutes or so? Probably got one touch on the ball.
Yeah,
you know, like it was never going to make or break the game. Yeah. But I don't know, like you're not going to just have him on the bench for the sake of it, I don't think, especially when we see the talent that Hale End produces. God, I haven't really felt old looking at a footballer before until I was like, oh my God. It really hit me then. But going back to the point, I don't think it was for the sake of it. I'm getting confused now. I always get confused with the Bees as well. Always, would you believe? So who do we play? We played Bournemouth.
Brentford.
You don't get infected with my disease, for God's sake.
Wait till we get on to the women later who played Brighton. That's going to be a nightmare. So we play Bournemouth and, they're not... Brentford, sorry.
Brentford.
Yeah. What is wrong with me? What's wrong with
Come on,
me?
Lauren,
sorry.
Shape up.
Yeah, edit this all out. We played the team we played, who they love to mention. We know how that went last season. So I don't think Arteta was going to go into that without a concrete plan, without actually knowing what he was going to do. So I wouldn't worry too much about a lack of depth in the squad based on this.
Well, there's an old saying, isn't it? I think it was Sir Matt Busby about 50 years ago. He said, if you're good enough, you're old enough. Brentford suffered their heaviest home top flight loss for quite some years, sort of many, many years. I haven't got it down here. Forgot to put it in, but never mind. We're having a successful pod. If we'd met this Brentford side last season, the outcome would have been incredibly different with the side we've got now. It's evidence, Jay, isn't it, of increased confidence, depth and progression, in my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, what was it? I think there was only four members of that side that started on Sunday that started in the previous or the equivalent fixture last season. And I mean, there's the quality has just gone up so much. So many players have gone out in such a short space of time, and the level of the squad has improved so much. But also, you know, the players that are there, I'm sure we'll get onto Xhaka, you know, he's gone up a couple of levels as well. You know, it's not just the players that have come in, obviously they've improved, but the players that have remained have improved as well, and their level has gone up. So, you know, tactically we look so switched on and we dominated from the start, you know, and I don't know if you guys were watching it on Sky Sports, but the commentators, it was almost as if they were just gutted that we were dominating. And there was so, I think it was Don Goodman was the co-commentator. And I mean, he was so reluctant to give us any credit. It was more to do with Brentford having an off day rather than us completely controlling every aspect of the performance. And we shut them down, we all knew it was going to be a tough place to go. Obviously Brentford had beaten Man United a couple of weeks ago and they just, we suffocated them. And, you know, I think they're renowned for their high press and they didn't get anywhere near us. And it should have been more. We missed a number of chances, especially, early on in the game. Martinelli definitely should have
been better. About five, shouldn't it? Be honest.
Yeah, and then you're talking, you know, 3-0 is a great result, but if we come out of there 5-0, you know, it's an absolute mauling. So, like I said, the quality in the squad has obviously gone up with the signings, but I think it's also important to note that the players that were there as well that have remained, they've also pushed on, and the level's improved so much that everybody's contributing, aren't they? It's not like there's only one or two players that are making, you know, obviously your striker, your central striker, your big money signing in the summers. It's important that he hits the ground running, which he has, you know, Jesus, but, you know, your Shakas and your Gabriels and players that have been there now a year or two, obviously in Shaka's case a lot longer, they've also stepped up and they've jumped on the train and they're enjoying it. The intensity and the quality in our performance now is so impressive that you don't want the international break, do you? You want the next game, and you want the games to come thick and fast. But yeah, it was hugely impressive.
Nick, do you think that Brentford, they really didn't resemble the outfit they were last season, did they, when we kicked off? Very poor, standing off, leaving gaps, pockets of space everywhere. The exact opposite. Were you surprised by that?
I was. I mean, they didn't even resemble the team they've been so far this season. I think going into the game, they had scored more goals than we had, and which is surprising with us top of the table. But knowing that they had scored more than us going into this game, I think just as a credit to them, I mean, they've put up big numbers in multiple games and didn't have a sniff. I think this was the least amount of shots that they had in a top flight game since they've been promoted. So we can talk about Ivan Toney and how he probably deserved his call up, and I'm happy for him. But I think we can also talk about this probably being our most controlled performance of the season, to where I think I've seen others talk about just us needing to see games out, needing us to find just 10, 15, 20 minute periods in games where we just suck the life out of teams. And I think an early goal will do that for sure. And then once the second went in, I mean, it was really hard to see them coming back into it. I mean, they barely had a sniff, one shot in the first half. It's really impressive seeing things come together. I mean, you can talk about the back line and you can talk about Saliba, you can talk about Kieran Tierney coming in and deputizing well, and Ben White at right back. I mean, where do we stop? But then, I mean, you can go in the midfield, and obviously starts at the top. The press has been tremendous, and I just saw time and time again, especially in the first half, where Brentford was trying to get out, and you know, we either had Thomas Partey or Granit Xhaka stepping in front of something, and we went possession back, or they had to resort to hoofing it long, and you could tell how frustrated Toney was becoming. So it was you know, to be honest, it wasn't the most exciting game. It was a very mature performance. I mean, I'll take 3 points any day, but that was the kind of performance that I think we were used to seeing under Wenger, to where you go to a team like this and you take care of them, and it's kind of a stroll in the park, as Ivan Toney said. But
he regrets that now, doesn't he? He regrets that so much.
Yeah, he had to know he was setting himself up for that one. But yeah, I think just a very mature performance, where I found myself last year saying a lot of these guys haven't been in this position. You look at COVID and you look at how young a team we had. I mean, the hostility of Brentford away last season was a baptism by fire, obviously. But this year, you know, we have guys, I mean, went through, you saw it on the documentary, you saw it obviously being supporters all last season. I mean, we've been there, and, you know, we're not veterans yet, but we have a lot of guys that this isn't their first rodeo, and you can tell they look experienced. Yeah. I think just a very veteran performance, to where we really, really nullified what has been so far an exciting Brentford team to watch.
Lauren, it's all gone horribly wrong. What's the score there? What went wrong?
Yeah, 2-2 here now. We're into the last 20 seconds of the game.
Oh dear.
Defending. Horrific defending, to be honest, giving them way too much space. We did get a goal from a corner, I think it was. A free kick.
Are you doing a cameo on us now, are you?
I'm trying hard. Do you know what? Whatever the stereotype is about women being able to multitask, I clearly can't, because I'm trying to focus on you, trying to focus on this. We did get a ball, did hit the back of the net, but it was offside. So looks like it's going to end 2-2 here, unfortunately.
That's not quite what we wanted, is it?
Absolutely
really?
Not.
Lauren, getting back to the Brentford-Bournemouth, whatever we want to call them, game.
That one.
That one. Do you think that was Arsenal's best performance, solid all-round performance this season?
Do you know what? It's funny. It was the first time this, for a long time, really, that I was watching Arsenal and I thought, it's a bit boring. At no point did I feel on edge. Did I feel nervous? Did I think, God, I was kind of sitting there going, you know, maybe just concede one so I can feel something, like, you know, obviously joking, you know. But no, it did. It was, I cannot remember the last time we were in such control of a game. Really. It was a joy to watch.
Jay, Bournemouth had to, Bournemouth again. Yeah, there we go. Brentford, we'll get it right. I don't know, it must be a typo or something. I keep reading it out. Let's get on to the goal. William Saliba, talk us through it, Jay. Looping header.
Yeah, the guy's a complete giant, isn't he? I don't know if any of you have seen the clip that's going around on Twitter of when Deschamps has seen, Didier Deschamps has seen Saliba for the first time, and he's like, he's in awe of just how much of a giant he is. And he's like, he's a specimen, isn't he? And we had a corner, I think it was Saka, wasn't it? Popped the corner in, and Saliba ran near post. Great connection on the header, flicked it to the back post. And he's a danger, isn't he, from set pieces, because his movement's good. And I mean, it just adds again to a brilliant start to the season. I mean, he's been better, I think, than most people expected. Defensively, he looks so cool.
I think you said it as well, Jay. It's like a new signing.
Yeah, really is like a new signing. And Tony, you know, he's one of the informed strikers in the league. You know, he scored a hat-trick a game or two ago. Just got a call up to the England squad, full of confidence, and you would never have guessed he was playing. Saliba and Gabriel completely marked him out of the game. You know, I thought they're both really suited to Tony's, you know, attributes. You know, he's good in the air and he's a physical guy. You know, I thought before the game we'd be okay with dealing with him. Yeah, Saliba, great header, another great performance. And the level that he's performing at this season, you know, he's... Even, you know, with the own goal against Leicester, you know, he's still put in a solid seven and a half. He's so strong and he looks so good. I'm slightly nervous about the contract situation with him. We need to get him tied down, because it's only going to take a good World Cup for someone like, you know, the big guns of Real Madrid or whoever to come. Sorry about that. To come.
Could have been worse. You could have farted.
So, yeah. Great header, and I'm sure he's gonna get a few more.
Nick, Gabriel Jesus popped up. What an exquisite ball from Granit Xhaka. He staggers me. The player we're actually looking at now, and the player that Wenger bought, and everyone was going, this guy's a mystery. You know, all he does is sideways, backwards. It was an exquisite goal, wasn't it, really? The flight of the ball was absolutely inch perfect.
Yeah, seeing this Granit Xhaka renaissance has been unbelievable. I didn't think he had it in him. I was very much a Xhaka hater and have done a full 180. Yeah, you as well, Tom. It's been I didn't think he had this side in him. Absolutely not. And I think I've really noticed Mikel Arteta playing him to his strengths and maybe nullifying his weaknesses by not leaving him as exposed and giving him some free roam up front. And he's really found his way about it, but yeah, what an exquisite ball. And, you know, we're used to him pinging 50, 60 yard balls across the pitch, but him dropping something in inch perfect like that was tremendous. And I'll say this a lot, but that's not a goal that Alex Lacazette scoring last season. And to have a killer like Gabby Jesus is brilliant. And, you know, it's pretty impressive with Brentford playing a back three with Ben Mee, Pontus Janssen, and why can't I think of the other one? It's just another monster. I can't think of the other one. The other center back.
That's the way the pod's going tonight. Don't worry.
Yeah, I had to contribute in my way.
Brain fart, central.
Yeah, no doubt. But just they're colossal, and especially against a smaller team, especially playing three in the back. I mean, that's bread and butter. It's just to head the ball out like that. And to drop one in between – like that was tremendous and a great finish. And like I said, a goal Lacazette wouldn't score. And once it's 2-0, I mean, it's hard to see a way back. We've started off so fast. And when we score in the first half, I'm like, oh, this is taken care of. And especially to get a second, it's, like Lauren said, it was just kind of in cruise control from there. And it's exciting in its own way. It's exciting to think, hey, are we there in that capacity where we have that? Because yeah, it's been years to where it's like, is this game in the bag, or is Mustafi going to slip or find a way to ruin this for us?
I used to call him the carpet man. He spent a lot of time on the floor, didn't he? What used to frustrate me about Granit Xhaka was when he played for his country, he was really aggressive and he was, you know, getting forward, influencing the play. And then when he came back to Arsenal, he did none of that. That's what really pissed me off about him. It's probably been done to death, Lauren, but Jesus gives us much more than goals, doesn't he? He gives us
100%
motivation, appetite, sharpness. Everyone seems to want to follow in his footsteps.
I'm going to use that again, overused phrase. He has that winner mentality that I think we've lacked 100%. And it's just dripping down through the team. And it really is in a nice way, you know, filtering. That's the word, isn't it? Filtering down. Oh God, guys, it's going great, isn't it?
It's what about better ones?
Yeah. Filtering down through the team. And you know, it really does look, given or hoping that we keep everyone fit and we have a solid start in 11, even with injuries this week, we look good enough to bring on a 15-year-old, you know? So, you know, it really does seem like there is just this almost, I don't want to say invincible mentality, but this very resilient mentality in the team throughout, which we've been lacking for how many years, I don't know. But yeah, no, it's a fantastic thing.
Jay, Fabio Vieira, 49 minutes. He's some sort of baller, isn't he? He took that opportunity outside the box. It was a peach of a goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, I love those shots that go in off the post. You know, they just look so good. And I think he's shown, hasn't he? And I think when he came on at Old Trafford, he had a couple of shots that he went quite close with, and he was always looking to try and create something. And what a great player to have not even as a backup, but just somebody who can come in maybe when Ødegaard is either injured or, you know, he's struggling, because I think he can play in a number of positions, can't he? I think he's quite versatile. He's a bit on the shorter and lighter side, but I think he's already showing that that's not going to be an issue. So lovely goal. I mean, the keeper had no chance. It looks like he gave the keeper the eyes, you know, expecting him to go the other way. And he put it in sort of the near post rather than what most players. And I think the keeper, Raya, who's a good goal, he's a good keeper himself, you know, I think he expected him to go to his right. Lovely finish. And, you know, the old song came back out, didn't it? The old Vieira song.
Put Portugal in there instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of Senegal.
Yeah.
What I liked about him is he's got that classy, cultured foot. So we really didn't miss Ødegaard as much. He is the 19th Arsenal player to score in his first start in the Premier League. And he is the only one to do so with a strike from outside the box. Don't say we don't try to educate you out there, podcast family. Let's do the match stats. 5 for them, 13 for us. 2 shots on target for them, 7 for us. 36% possession, a monstrous 64% for us. 321 passes for them, 592 for us. And 74% pass accuracy for them, 85% for us. Lauren, we're going on to the Brighton and Hove Albion. It's still Brighton and Hove Albion we played, isn't it? I've not lost my mind.
Yeah, no, it is Brighton and Hove. Yep, yeah. All good there. Watch me say Brentford or Bournemouth at least 3 times, but no, Brighton. Well,
we've all done it. It's like infectious, isn't it?
Yeah, so the lineup was, obviously this is our opening WSL fixture. We had Zinsberger in goal. We had Weinreuter, so Austrian right back starting. It was
God, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, don't worry. I did enough years of German to practice to say that one. So that was the real surprise start in the lineup. She went in a right back off the back of her Euros performance. Williamson, Rafaela, standard centre back pairing, and Katie McCabe was in at left back. Quite an attacking left back decision, but given the quality of the opposition, I think it was fairly standard. Midfield of Valti and Captain Kim Little, Beth Mead, Viviana Miedema, and Ford with Blackstenius up front. So, I mean, on paper, probably one of our strongest starting 11. So I was happy with that.
The sending off after 7 minutes made it almost impossible for Brighton and Hove Albion, didn't it? They were flogging a dead horse, but they lived a charmed life, didn't they, Lauren? God almighty, there was posts and bars and all sorts. And the finishing from Arsenal wasn't too pretty, was it, sometimes?
No, it really took a long time to kind of get up to, you know, fourth, fifth gear even. We didn't even hit sixth gear, I'd say, throughout the match. It was a bit scrappy up top. And I think just having watched the bit of the Ajax game there, that's again where we were lacking today to end up drawing 2-2 against them at home in the first leg of the Champions League. So that's something I'd be concerned about. I think, you know, Miedema obviously had a rough time during the Euros after getting COVID. Bit surprised from Beth Mead. Obviously on the Brighton game, she got 2 goals. Standard. I mean, she did come off saying, you know, I would have liked more, and you're kind of going, okay, you know, calm down. But yeah, I think tonight, just to emphasize our lack of threat in front of the goal, she probably should have done better with a few of her chances as well. So something maybe we should be a bit concerned about, but two games in, hopefully it'll come with time.
I mean, Megan Walsh played a blinder. You're right there, lads. Have a drink or something, and a hobnob. We'll be with you in a minute. yeah, it looked a bit rusty at times, Arsenal. The engine was moving, but we just lacked that final sort of pass a lot of the time. Let's talk about the goals, Lauren. Little, 28 minutes. Blackstenius, after 50 minutes, that was a peach of a strike. That
kind of made up for the rest of it, didn't it? I mean, Beautiful goal. We just need more of that, really. And she just proved we have the quality to do it. So
Beth Mead got 2, 63rd and 83rd, but her best goal was the 83rd one, in my opinion. Lovely, absolutely delicious turn and touch. It was it was spellbinding. We could, as I said, we could have had a hatful. We could have been a bit sharper. Mm. Desperate defending from Brighton. They're not looking good already, are they? I know they were a person down, but, you know, come on.
I think, you know, even with the sending off, I think it's probably how the game would have gone anyway. You know, with all due respect to Brighton, they didn't look sharp. They really didn't.
They're not Brazil, are they?
I wouldn't say so, no.
Who impressed you most, Lauren? I liked Caitlin Ford. She impressed me up and down that side flank.
I'd have to agree with that. I think we looked the most dangerous on the left with Katie McCabe and her linking up. You know, that was where all the chances were being created from in the first half. And then as, I suppose, Brighton tired a bit, we did get a bit more luck coming in from the middle or the right. But it really was all on the left-hand side that the chances were being created.
Miedema had quite a sort of quiet game, didn't she? But every time she touches the ball, there's a bit of class there. You can see it. It's oozing from her, isn't it?
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, she had a very rough Euros in the international break just 2 weeks prior to this match. So the week before the WSL was meant to start, she did play for the Netherlands, but she looked winded. She looked tired. She was coughing on the pitch. But as things go on, hopefully she will get her fitness back and, you know, be scoring for fun again.
Let's talk about injuries, because you were talking about them earlier on. It seems to be rife in the media at the moment. I put a post out on Facebook. Please, God, no more injuries, especially to Tomiyasu and KT. I promised to donate to the poorly constructed church roof on a Sunday. They're currently getting through 3 a year. Back in 2017, John Moody of The Mirror did an article, and it revealed since 2011, the Gunners have seen their players be out of action for an enormous 10,285 days. That was more than Manchester United, 9,600 days. What are we doing at Arsenal? Is it an Arsenal thing? Hey, getting the pun in there. Is it an Arsenal thing? Or is it because, like, there's too many games, they're training fiercely hard, it's a very competitive league, fast pace? What is it, Jay? Why do we have... normally, it's December, isn't it? We get all our defenders all injured at once.
It's not just us. You know, other teams, you know, Liverpool, for example, have really struggled this season, and they've had to field some sides, you know, that heavily depleted sides. It's not just us. In recent years, you know, you've had your Jack Wilshers and your Aaron Ramsays, and, you know, these guys that have had real bad injuries, which have contributed to obviously the numbers that you just read out. But it's concerning, you know, that so quickly we are struggling. You know, there's no doubt about that. Obviously, we discussed Thomas Partey. He's been a massive, massive problem for us. Somebody who showed against Brentford just how key he is to us. And he's such a massive player that his ball retention and his use of to be able to deal with the press in right in the center of the pitch, to deal with the way he does and to keep the team ticking over is so huge. You know, Lokonga's done pretty well, but you know, he's still young and still learning, and he's not at Partey's level. It's not just us. Every team has injuries, but I'm sure it's a concern, you know, and obviously the season's going to get a lot more truncated after the international break, and we're going to have to, there's no doubt we're going to get a lot more injuries. The World Cup's coming up. So that's going to be obviously difficult for the players going, but also what happens to the players that aren't going to the World Cup and how are they managed? You know, there's obviously going to be games played behind closed doors and, you know, friendlies and stuff. And the training's going to have to be maybe obviously slightly different. So it's not just us. Every team has those injuries. You know, when you've got a squad like, say, Man City, for example, they've got three or four great players in each position. So you maybe don't notice it as much. Whereas for us, especially last season, you know, when we lost Tierney and we lost Partey at a real pivotal moment of the season, you know, it was a go-to as a reason as to why we fell away the way we did.
Well, I think that's one of the comments in social media is it says that someone believes that has long believed that the injuries to key players have cost us the title at times. And that's probably fair. I think the worry is, Nick, that we're only a few games into the season.
Yeah, maybe us as fans were scarred by some of these. I mean, we've had some tragic injuries. I mean, the Eduardo, Aaron Ramsey, Diaby, all broken legs. I mean, and maybe those have made us even more jaded towards injuries and thinking we've got it worse than others. But Jay, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, Man City has three or four deep in every position, and missing two or three guys is no thing to them. So yeah, I have a friend that's just a pretty, I mean, he's gotten into the game because of me and a big American sports fan. And he was like, I feel like Arsenal players are injured more. He's like, what's up with the training staff? I'm like, well, this is just how it is. I really didn't know how to explain it. And, you know, as I'm trying to think about it, maybe it's something to where we try to play more younger players and their bodies are still developing. I mean, the injury with Smith Rowe is interesting because Mikel said that, you know, it's his groin that keeps acting up, but it's not an injury. It's because he's growing. And I'm like, still growing. I mean, he's what, 21, 22, but that's totally in his wheelhouse to do. So I just thought that was fascinating to hear. And you treat that so much differently than you do a Thomas Partey, who I've heard been called Thomas part-time on social media. And
priceless.
And yeah, thought that was pretty accurate because, man, when we have him, we are a different team. But without him, the alarm bells are going off. So, yeah, it's like I said earlier, it's just always something. I think every team that wins the league has to have an amount of luck just on the field, but especially with injuries. You look at the Liverpool teams. Them especially, I mean, having kind of a similar model as us rather than City being so deep in every position. I mean, Salah, Mane, their best players playing every single game, always ready for every big game. Torres, looking at us last year, I mean, you can say we fell off the ledge, but I mean, having without critical guys in important build-up positions, I mean, no Tomiyasu, no Tierney, no Thomas Partey. I mean, our build-up was absolutely shot. Had to change our formation, and it was just a cluster trying to put it back and reasonably get something out there. I mean, changing the entire model just off of who you have. So I know Mikel wants a smaller squad, but you see the kind of disadvantages of that already, to where it's like, well, a smaller squad. And I think we had six guys not make the team that maybe would have previously. And, you know, that's six is a big number. So I'm pretty confident we're going to make some moves in January. With a January window, it's unprecedented after the World Cup. But I think we're going to be back in for at least one, maybe if not two. So I'm naturally an optimist. So I'm hoping for that. And as I did last year and was very disappointed by that, but you know, just the injuries they're not going to go away. The amount of fixtures having to be played in such a just shoehorned in there plus the World Cup. I mean, yeah, Jay, you said it too. The guy's not going to the World Cup. It's almost like COVID. Well, you're expected to stay ready. You're not going to go on holiday. You're expected to stay ready, and then you're going to have to jump back in. So, you know, the World Cup guys will have match fitness, but will maybe be burnt out. And the guys that didn't go are going to be needing some sort of match fitness, which I trust they'll get somehow. But there's nothing like playing in a real real game. So it will be very interesting to see how that's managed.
Right, let's move on to the possible Spurs game. Could be called off because of apparently a train strike. Jay, have you watched them this season grudgingly? Have you seen them in action or match of the day with the Crisp King?
I saw the Chelsea game, which they were fortunate to get something from. You know, the whole Romero Cucurella hair pull. But no, I haven't seen any more. I think home advantage is going to play a massive part if it goes ahead. And I think we have to go into the game full of confidence. You know, there's because both teams are doing so well, you know, it almost ramps it up a little bit more, doesn't it? Not that the fixture needs much hyping, but they're doing well, obviously, and we're doing slightly better. So I think home advantage in these fixtures normally makes all the difference. We need to, obviously, 10 outfield players on the pitch, can't avoid any red cards, can't have any Rob Holding moments. There was the penalty in that fixture as well, wasn't there, that Cedric got penalised for. And, you know, you don't get that if you're the home team. Look, I'm confident, absolutely, you have to be. I've got a couple of lads that I play with on at the weekend, and they're Spurs fans, and they said that Spurs, they haven't been that good this season. You know, they've been fortunate to maybe come out with a few more points than maybe they deserved. So if we start the way we have this season in every game, including the game at Old Trafford, if we start on the front foot and we dictate, which I expect us to, especially at home, I think the win is there. And, you know, it will be a good way to shut up a lot of the media that have said we've had a relatively easy start and we slipped up in our first test. So this is definitely a test. Spurs, I'm not saying for one second that Spurs aren't a good side, because they clearly are. And Conte's got, he's getting a lot out of certain players, you know, like Dier and, you know, these lads that have pretty average footballers, but he's getting a tune out of them. So it's going to be a tough game, but I expect us to win. Absolutely. You have to, you know, we're in good form. So yeah.
Lauren, I've been quite bored by them, to be honest, at times. I've seen a few of their matches and they're deadly dull. Everyone's banging on about Conte and what a good manager he is. He is a solid manager, but he's still working with some tosh.
The reason why people are praising him as a manager is because of how poor their performances have been, and they're still undefeated, you know? The games I've watched, they've been absolutely appalling, as in really poor quality football. And you're kind of sitting there scratching your head going, these are the crowd that people are tipping to finish above us, really. Haven't been convinced by them. It does feel like they're getting a lot of luck in the results. So you'd wonder how long that's actually going to go on for. Also probably worth mentioning that Arsenal women are playing Spurs this weekend as well, which is definitely going ahead. Not sure if that was going to be mentioned, but it feels like a good time to bring it up.
Excellent.
In what is tipped to be a WSL record-breaking match at Emirates Stadium. So I think there's still probably tickets on sale for that if anyone can go and wants to go to that.
Nick, do you think that Tottenham are a bit of a two-trick pony? Take Son out, get him injured. Harry Kane, the brutal thug. If he's injured as well, what have they got left?
Nothing. I've watched them, I think, every game this season because I find lots of joy when they drop points. So I find myself always watching them, hoping, and they have just scraped out results. And it's just like, how can they keep this going? It's almost impressive to where it's like a car with three wheels and somehow it's just continuing to go down the road. And you're just like, how is this happening? And I mean, we talk about injuries and how a couple key ones killed our season last year. If Kane himself goes down, I can't see them having much. I mean, they've added Richarlison into the rotation. I mean, Son didn't even start the Leicester game and came on with a hat trick, but their ability to score lots of goals from limited chances or even low percentage chances is what makes them what they are. You can watch them for most of the game. They're just spamming crosses in. You know, the midfield isn't creative. And you're just like, how are they scoring these goals? And, you know, it's just a half chance that they can bury. So I think, to me, this game lines up very similar to the United game, to where Trust will play a very high line. And I mean, I even think, well, we have the ability to dominate possession, 60-40, maybe even worse than that. And it's just the quality of chances that we get and they get. And I mean, that's what it turns out. And But I think that'll play into their hands. So I'm not sure, but I do think we need to play the high line because as we did with Brentford can really suffocate them. And I don't think they have the creativity to play out of it. And, you know, if we're healthy in the back, I think I trust those four guys with their pace and their recovery ability to play 3-on-3 defensively at times, which I think we're going to need to do.
I think as well, we've got Saliba now, who will definitely strengthen up that sort of left-hand side when they run down. Let's have some predictions. Jay, what's your prediction for that game?
3-1.
3-1. Right. Yeah, I'll go with that. That's good. Lauren?
So now, I think it depends how the international break goes, injuries and, you know, how players get on for their country. Oh, God. 2-1, maybe? I don't know. I'm not confident in that guess, but I'll say 2-1 just for the sake of participating.
What we'll do is if you get it wrong, we'll just replay it on the next one. As if we've got the technology and, yeah, and we don't have any brain farts. Nick, what's your position?
Yeah, this game definitely does not have a draw written over it, and there's definitely going to be goals. I'm also going to go 2-1. I trust that we'll take care of business being at home. I mean, the Emirates has turned into an absolute cauldron, and I can see that just watching on TV. So I can't imagine. I mean, last season, that was a cracking atmosphere. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like at this point with two teams at the top of the table, bitter rivals. And yeah, I'm going to go 2-1.
Sounds good to me. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'll get my teeth in, get my brain turned on for the next one. Nick, thanks for joining us. Hopefully you'll come back again. It's been a hoot. And absolutely. Look after yourselves.
Thanks, Tom.
See you later.
Bye.
Thanks, bye.
Connor delivers another excellent player profile on Hector Bellerin.
It's an Arsenal thing, player profile time again. And under the spotlight for this latest dosage is Hector Bellerin. His full name, Hector Bellerin Moruno, in case you didn't know. He was born just outside of Barcelona in a place called Badalona on the 19th of March 1995. He made a total of 183 appearances for us, scoring 8 times. He won 3 FA Cups and 3 Community Shields with us, and was named in the 2015-2016 PFA Team of the Year. The 27-year-old left Arsenal at the start of the 2021-22 season to join Manuel Pellegrini's Real Betis on loan before returning to us this past summer. His career was in a bit of limbo though this past summer, as there was plenty of uncertainty surrounding who he would end up playing for before this summer's transfer window closed. Bellerin was eventually signed up by Xavi's Barcelona on a free transfer on deadline day. A good move for all involved, with Bellerin returning to his boyhood club to be close to his family, who currently live in Calella, a beautiful picturesque town around 3 hours outside of Barcelona. And well, Hector is somewhat of a fashion icon for many youngsters these days. He started working on a sustainable clothing collection with none other than H&M last year. And he was also named creative director for FIFA 21's Volta Street Football Mode in September 2020. Not only that, oh no, but the right back, who spent 11 years with us, has also been quite the busy environmentalist and has been helping to plant thousands upon thousands of trees in the Amazon rainforest for the past couple of years. A role model off the pitch, that is for sure, Hector Bellerin. Well, Bellerin's professional career began back at Barcelona in 2010 at the age of 15. Arsene Wenger then snatched him up a year later in the summer of 2011. He made his Arsenal debut on the 25th of September 2013 when we beat West Bromwich Albion on penalties in the League Cup at the Hawthorns. He then scored his first goal for the Arsenal in a 5-0 home win against Aston Villa in the Premier League on the 1st of February 2015. He previously had spent a brief loan spell at Watford at the end of 2013 before becoming a mainstay in Wenger's starting 11, as he enjoyed an excellent breakthrough 2014-2015 season. He was a crucial part of our 2015 FA Cup winning side and scored 3 Premier League goals in his debut season. He made his Champions League debut for the club on the 16th of September 2014 in a 2-0 away loss to Borussia Dortmund. He made his international debut for Spain on the 29th of May 2016 and has since gone on to make 3 more appearances for his national side. He was also notably part of Spain's squad for the 2016 European Championships. But a sad moment in Bellerin's career, he suffered a nasty cruciate ligament rupture at the beginning of 2019, which kept him out for 9 months. And really, all Arsenal fans will agree that Bellerin's form just wasn't quite up to standard since his return late 2019. But still, a brilliant servant to the club, 11 years at the Emirates, Hector Bellerin.
Right, let's have some football folk with the names of food. What about Kevin Lasagna? Massimo Macaroni, Lassie Scone, or is it Scone? Yaya Banana, Mark Fish. You could have a Cali Korma with Declan Rice. You could have a Patrick Berger, a Dean Gherkin with John Mayo in a Mark Bun. Or a Dale Fry-Up with Danny Bacon and Carl Heggs. So there you have it, Heggs and Bacon. All right, we cheated, but this isn't easy to put together, you know. We could wash it down with a glass of Danny Drinkwater. That's it, we're all done here. My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Bald Gooner. You can cozy up with Connor at ConnorJack2 on the Twitterverse, and Paul is at PMacCap. Look up Lauren on LaurenD2710. Shoutouts to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon DC, Let's Be Arsenal FC, which is twin to the podcast. Also, check out Ask Devils for opinion and news on all things Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal thing for at gmail.com. More importantly, a big heartfelt thank you to you guys out there for all your emails, your encouragement, your support, whether you watch or listen. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this, North London is red. Cheers.